I do think it ends up kind of being like a sci-fi novel, like somebody mentioned to me, like Blade Runner, where it's like you don't want to have prisons full of people that you view as lesser, and they're just there to harvest for organs and parts for people who are free and on the outside. Like that, to me, is very problematic.
So, do you even remember Blade Runner, Chris? It probably came out before you were born. You strike me as more of a Hunger Games kind of guy.
Hey, I've seen Blade Runner 2049.
Oh, that one. Okay. Chris Blake, he's one of our producers here on Something Offbeat, and he's 33, by the way. And like most of us, a big fan of dystopian movies. That's probably why there are so many of them. We're just drawn to them for some reason. And TV shows, too. Squid Games comes to mind. But tell me about the story that led us to this subject.
Well, I'm obviously not a pop culture nerd if I haven't seen any of these movies, but I do like politics, and I came across this story about a bill filed in the Massachusetts state legislature that would have allowed certain incarcerated people the opportunity to shave no less than 60 and up to 365 days off of their sentence if they donate an organ or bone marrow.
Full year.
A full year. It was filed by two state reps, Democrats Judith Garcia and Carlos Gonzalez, but was met with outcry from prisoners' rights advocates. The lawmakers have since said they would amend the language not to include the sentence reduction.
So this got us wondering about the ethics of organ donations in exchange for reduced time and about the prison healthcare system at large. So I spoke with Carrie Aspinwall, a staff writer at the Marshall Project, which covers the criminal justice system.
The Marshall Project is a nonprofit journalism organization devoted to coverage of our criminal legal system. Courts, prisons, how criminal trials happen, judges, public defenders, that kind of stuff, everything that touches those parts of the system. So we write and investigate all of that because the U.S. has the largest incarceration rate in the world, which is kind of surprising. I think a lot of people don't know that. We incarcerate a lot of our individuals in this country. Part of our mission is to look at why that happens.
More than 2 million people are incarcerated in the U.S., and the Department of Justice estimates that we spend close to $80 billion a year on our prisons.
When you look at the medical people who govern these rules in the U.S. ethics community, they are not for this. They don't want organs to be given out of financial or coerced incentives. It's viewed as very problematic because if you think about it, people who are behind bars, who are essentially wards of the state, captive there until their time is served to the state. The question is, can they really consent to this knowingly and willingly?
What were your initial thoughts when you heard about this bill in Massachusetts?
I don't know these lawmakers, and so I don't want to assume bad intentions or anything. I think they're probably trying to fix two different problems, the scarcity of organ and tissue transplant donors and availability for that, and then the very real problem of people serving too long of sentences and needing some way to relieve the overcrowded packed prisons in most states. In most states, these prisons are packed to the gills, and people are living in kind of inhumane conditions. So I think probably they thought, oh, well, you know what? We could do this and offer this organ donation incentive and maybe take a little time off someone's sentence. The problem is, I don't know that they talked to anyone who actually deals with UNOS or the organ donation network. There's like a board that governs all the policies. There's rules to how people get organs donated and given to them in the system. And they're very strict about it because they want it to be ethical and fair to everybody.
One criminal justice reform advocacy group told the Associated Press, quote, "Promoting organ donation is good. Reducing excessive prison terms is also good. But tying the two together is perverse," end quote.
And that's the same thing we get into when there's somebody who is behind bars, is incarcerated, and has a sexual relationship with a guard. That's why it's considered rape under state laws, because they don't have the free will to make consent behind bars. So even though something like organ donation has a good intent, and can have a good intent, and that's why under federal law, people can donate organs, prisoners can donate an organ to a family member, they don't want to incentivize or try to, you know, set up a network where somebody who is serving a very long sentence could get less time by, you know, basically offering up their kidneys or part of their liver. It's ethically and medically problematic.
I have to say, at first blush, as you said, you look at this and your initial reaction is, oh, it's a win-win. But mm-hmm. I guess it's kind of a classic case of unintended consequences.
Yeah, definitely. Because I think it sounds great. And I know many of the people who are behind bars would love to help out. They, a lot of people, if they really have changed their life and turned their life around, they want to be useful. They want to be helpful. But this is a problematic way of going about that. I guess it's been proposed before for people who are condemned prisoners. If they're going to be executed anyway, can't we save their organs for somebody else? But I think the problem is then you have the doctors who are harvesting the organs essentially become part of the execution team, which goes against some of their medical ethics.
Chris, you and I have mentioned it before on this podcast. We are located in Dallas. The state of Texas has executed the most people by far since the U.S. reinstated the death penalty back in the 1970s. In fact, we have more than one-third of the national total on our own.
And speaking of execution teams that Aspinwall mentioned, even if it was an ethical idea, nearly half the states in the country have done away with capital punishment, and it's continuing to lose favor. New Mexico, Illinois, Connecticut, Maryland, New Hampshire, Colorado, and Virginia have all gotten rid of the death penalty in the last 15 years, according to the National Conference of State Legislatures.
Back to Aspinwall for a moment. Before she went to work for the Marshall Project, she was a reporter, first in Oklahoma and later here in Dallas. She recounted a couple of the stories related to the prison healthcare system that she covered in both states.
The last time I wrote a story about this, it had to do with a young man who was in county jail in Oklahoma many years ago. And he was in county jail, so he hadn't been sentenced to prison yet. He was awaiting a trial. And unfortunately, this man took his life while waiting at the jail. But since it was in a city and they were able to get him to the hospital so quickly, they were able to harvest his organs because he had marked on his driver's license as a free individual that he wanted to be an organ donor, right? So they harvested his organs and they gave them to several people. And the reason I ended up writing about his story was the woman who got one of his organs, I think a kidney, contacted me and she wanted to know who this man was. She'd heard that he was in jail. That's all she knew about him. And so I had to go and help her and figure out who he was. So I think there are a lot of people who would want to help, but you have to consider the condition that they're in. And when I spoke to the Department of Corrections in Oklahoma at the time for that story, they said most prisoners would be turned down by organ donation networks because of health conditions. You have to think about the people who've been in long-term incarceration for a long time. A lot of times they have hepatitis C. They've been not taken very well care of. It's hard enough for them when they need an organ. Sometimes the people behind bars are the ones who need the organ transplanted. And I don't know that where they go on the list. I think that's really hard.
That brings up another question. It's a much broader question because you're talking about healthcare in the prison system. What can we do to improve that? Is that just a question of dollars and cents?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it's if we lock up this many people, we got to pay for their health care, right? And that's the conversation. That's that part about the medical parole where I'm talking about those, you know, Florida, for instance, has the highest rate of prisoners serving life without parole in the country for things that aren't not murder. Like they, in Florida, because they abolished the pardon and parole process for anyone sentenced after 1983, they have a whole bunch of people, almost 13,000 people serving life without parole, basically.
Chris, that sounds like a lot, is it?
Oh, yes. It's not quite the percentage of capital punishment that Texas has carried out compared to other states, but it's close. Aspinwall reported in 2021 that Florida accounts for more than a quarter of the nationwide total. That's because Florida eliminated parole for most offenses in 1983 and got rid of it entirely in the mid-90s.
Are there other states that have done the same?
That's a little bit more complicated. There are 16 states that do not allow parole, but Florida did it differently. It has a two strikes rule, which Aspinwall reported tells prosecutors to seek the maximum sentence for anyone who commits a felony within 3 years of leaving prison. It also takes the sentencing discretion away from judges. Those two pieces of the Florida law can often lead to life in prison.
That is where a state where you have prisoners who have stage four cancer who cannot get medical parole. You know, when we incarcerate these people, when we house them, we have a responsibility to pay for their medical care. That's just part of our constitution, our government. Like it's been proven out in case law, whether people like it or not. So it is our responsibility. And very often they're not getting very good medical care. Typically, you know, if you donate an organ, if you donate a kidney and you and I say I go into hospital, then I'm guaranteed that if something goes wrong with me, I have access to medical care because I'm outside and I can go to the hospital. But most prisons are in rural America. far away from hospitals. Most prisoners get really terrible medical care. So I don't know. You know, I think if you take away that incentive, there are people who might go for it.
Organ donations notwithstanding, I think this brings up a really interesting conversation about the power dynamics in our criminal justice system.
Absolutely. I think desperation can make people do things they wouldn't otherwise do. We read that the maximum amount of time could be taken off of a sentence is a year, but think about how much you've changed and how much you've done in just 365 days.
Well, I guess I haven't lost any more hair. Of course, that's a pretty low bar, but she makes a good point. 1 year is not an insignificant amount of time.
What they're offering these people are, you know, is a briefly shortened sentence akin to pardon and parole. This is supposed to be how the system works in this country, is if you've turned your life around and you want to do something good for society, then you go before a parole board and you ask them to shorten your sentence. Well, the problem with doing it this way is that, you know, when we have these parole board hearings, the family of a victim of a crime will often come and protest. Well, what do you do if you have somebody who's dying in a hospital and they want this organ and the prisoner is willing to donate it, but there's the victim's family objecting and saying, I don't want him getting less time by giving up an organ? All kinds of problems could happen from that.
So we're talking about people who were locked up donating organs to help people outside of the prison system. But that's not necessarily a two-way street, is it?
The reality is we have millions of people behind bars. We have thousands of people in each state serving really long sentences. We have pardon and parole boards, which are traditionally the function of this. But in most states, if you are an elderly prisoner in a very advanced stage of cancer, heart disease, you can't even get medical parole. So introducing this into the system, I think, would just create chaos. I met a woman in Texas, in Dallas, when I was still at the Morning News, who had stage 4 breast cancer behind bars. And she didn't get treatment in time and had to have like full double mastectomy, and she almost died. And so that story sticks with me. I think that would be my big concern about this, is that somebody would go in well-meaning and give a kidney away. And then what happens if they get sick behind bars? What happens to them if suddenly they need a kidney transplant? So I think that's, you know, one of those things we talk about, because the medical care behind bars is really appalling in most states. I think some states are trying to work on it, but it is expensive to keep people behind bars and care for them long term.
Do you think there's a relationship between the health, the overall health in some of these marginalized communities, and the incarceration rates around the country?
I think when people talk about that, what they're talking about is that we are very often in most states locking up the poorest of the poor, right? Like if you look at our county jails before people go to prison, and even our prisons once people get through there, but most county jails in big cities, in Dallas, in Fort Worth, in Oklahoma City, they are full of people who are unhoused, transient, living on the streets, often suffering from mental health issues, addiction, substance use issues. And that's the primary reason why they're in jail. Maybe it's drug possession, maybe it's trespassing, but the vast majority of people in there. And I think that isn't what most people think. I think that they think the prisons and jails are full of violent, evil people, and that's really just not the case.
I worked in news for a long time, Chris, and I'll admit, when Carrie said it's stuff we don't want to deal with, I thought about all the stories I've covered, the scripts I've read about crime and people being locked up without even a second thought.
I've been doing this for a little less time than you have, and I agree. I work on the digital team, and I feel like I've reached a point where I can turn a police press release into a short web story in just a few minutes and not really think twice.
We've just kind of become numb to it. All of us, not just journalists, could probably do a better job empathizing with many of those, not all, but many of those who are incarcerated and their families.
We work really hard at the Marshall Project to try and get people to see the people who are locked up in our prisons and not see them as subhuman or something else. That's a real struggle, because I think it's really easy, if you don't know anyone who's been to jail or prison, to kind of stigmatize and, you know, assume things about them. You don't want a system that treats the people behind bars differently or if you wouldn't allow this kind of incentivized organ donation for non-prisoners, you probably shouldn't allow it for prisoners.
I'm Mike Rogers. Thanks for listening to Something Offbeat. This episode, written and produced by Lauren Berry and Chris Blake. Audio editing by Chris Blake. Original music by Myron Kaplan, and editorial support from Cooper Mall. And to keep listening, please subscribe to us on the Odyssey app or Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. And if you've got your own offbeat story that you think we should cover, please send it to us at somethingoffbeat@audacy.com.